Welcome back to But Why the Podcast, where we talk about the things in pop culture that matter and ask the question, but why though? As always, I'm your host, Kate, and I'm here with Adrian.
Hey, how's it going?
And Matt.
Hello.
And great Hera, we're talking about a 76-year-old superheroine and probably one of the most well-known female superheroes, Wonder Woman. And as always, we're going to start off with a question. So I kind of thought a lot about it, and I think there are like four types of Wonder Woman. There's the comic book one, there's Linda Carter, there's Gal Gadot, and then there is the animated Wonder Woman from the animated DC universe, including the Justice League and then all the movies they made after it. So which one's your favorite, guys, and how much do you know about her?
I'll go ahead. My favorite would be the animated series one. I guess I watched all the Justice League cartoons in the, I guess, the early 2000s, late 90s. I know her as a founding member of the Justice League, which includes Green Lantern and Martian Manhunter, which they forget in the movies, not Cyborg.
Which Green Lantern?
John Stewart, obviously.
Exactly.
We don't care about Hal Jordan. But yes. But that would be my favorite one.
Did you say Flash? Did you forget Flash?
No, well, that was misunderstood.
It's implied. What about you, Adrian?
The fact that you didn't bring up Courtney Lee Crosby's spy Wonder Woman as one of the ones to pick is blasphemous, and I don't appreciate it. No, it's the anime. I mean, I was born in the early 90s. I grew up on animated series Wonder Woman. Like, she's the only Wonder Woman I really knew until I started getting into comics and stuff. So it's definitely for her. It's like the Joker. I can't get past animated series Joker. Like, that's always going to be Joker to me, and it's the same way for Wonder Woman. As great as Gal Gadot's portrayal was in the movies, it's still that animated one that comes back to me. She's still doing the voice, like today, like in the Injustices, she still does that voice because she's so iconic. So.
And she, I believe she does not only the Justice League that we're familiar with, but she also does all, like, the extended, not extended universe, but, you know, all the animated films that they come out with.
And stuff. Yeah. She is Wonder Woman.
She's as quintessential as everybody else. I'm actually in the exact same camp. So this, I know on the podcast before I've talked about a lot about reading comics. I did not read that much DC, and the wealth of my DC knowledge came from the animated universes for, I'd probably say, up until about I started my master's degree, and that's when I started reading more of the DC comics. Wonder Woman in the show is mine, and I actually think the best fight scenes I've ever seen animated are in the animated movies that they have with Wonder Woman.
The new ones or the older ones?
Both of them.
Okay.
Like her, so I hate the lasso unless it's animated Wonder Woman lasso, because she does this thing where she like lassos them and then steps on it and they slam into the ground, and it's the best move ever. So yeah, animated Wonder Woman all the way.
Her lasso skills in the movie are pretty good.
They're pretty good, but I was very mad that I didn't get a stomp on the lasso, like, throw them down move, because that's my
favorite. Gotcha.
You gotta use them powerful legs. But anyway, so we'll jump right into a little bit of the origin. I'm not gonna do the long histories that I usually do, mostly because all of it can be wrapped up into the many but why those for Wonder Woman. So, quick little origin. She appeared 76 years ago during the Golden Age of Comics in All-Star Comics number 8, and the year was 1941, and she was written by William Moulton Marston. Her name is, or her aliases are Diana Prince, or Diana Princess of Themyscira.
So did she get her last name based on basically kind of how, I guess, Princess of Themyscira, they just kind of called her Prince to make up a last name?
No. Okay. So in the Golden Age, she gets Diana Prince because she actually ends up meeting a doppelganger nurse while Steve Trevor is unconscious in a hospital bed. And she pays the nurse to go live in South America and then takes the nurse's identity. And the nurse,
wait, that's so messed up.
Is Diana Prince. Yes. And
can we talk about how messed up that is for a second?
Well, what's even more,
hey, uproot your life because I'm Wonder Woman. Get out of here.
Well, what's even more messed up is that one, Steve Trevor cannot fall in love with Diana Prince because he's too much in love with Wonder Woman. And two, the real Diana Prince actually does come back later in the comics asking for her life back and how much has ruined her. So, but she can't get it back. So, yeah, that's where the name came from.
All right, that sounds a little dark. I wasn't expecting that, but
yeah, I was not expecting that either. That's messed up.
Identity theft, just stole.
It wasn't theft. She paid for it. She sure. paid her hard-won actress money for it. That's how she got the money.
To go to South America, a nurse. Nurses get paid, you know, pretty decently here in America. And she was like, hey, get out of here. I'm Wonder Woman.
But the cool thing was, is the nurse identity actually let her go into the different theaters in World War II. So, because she was World War II propaganda. Bail bonds were sold to many because of her.
Just like... seems like almost all the, a lot of comic book characters, yes. unfortunately.
Yes.
I say because unfortunately just because I'm not a big fan of the, I guess, the World War II comics, what they yeah. portray. That's why I never really cared for the Captain America, either the first movie or some of his, I guess, origin comics.
Yeah. No, I mean, and that makes sense. She was definitely a product of her time. I'll get into that in a little tiny bit. But she does have a storyline that changes depending on the writer. So initially, Wonder Woman was an Amazon, and Wonder Woman was actually a term for the strongest of Amazon, not actually her title. And she wasn't given it. She wasn't given the title Wonder Woman by anybody but the Amazons themselves. So that was a nice little tidbit. So she goes from being an Amazon into being a demigod, pretty much, in the New 52. So that's 2011. I believe it's Greg Rucka's run. He makes her a demigod. And over the course of the different ages, she gets more and more mythology-based. So her name is also, it's the Roman version of the Greek god Artemis. So she also has powers. And those powers are that she has super strength, great hand-to-hand combat. Her weapons are the Lasso of Truth or the Lasso of Hephaestus, depending on which one you're looking at. And her bracers, which are very significant in Amazonian culture of Themyscira, because in the origins, Themyscira was actually a place that was... all the women were slaves by men, pretty much.
Well, I think what also I saw, apparently, her tiara throw... was apparently a big thing as well.
Ooh. I'd like never... Sailor Moon?
Sure. But apparently she throws her tiara around a lot. From what I was I have not seen that in any of this stuff, but apparently that's what they said, especially for this the World War II and the older versions of Wonder Woman. Okay.
Yeah, I haven't seen that actually. But that's actually pretty I'd love to see that. Now I want to see like a Wonder Woman Sailor Moon hybrid where she does moon tiara magic, only it's like a Wonder Woman equivalent to it.
Well, if you look at the costume, take away the skirt, I mean, you could get some close there. They spin around.
One of them spins around.
Well, they transform.
She can also fly, but she only flies from 1985 on. So she can't fly in anything else. So she doesn't fly on like the Linda Carter TV series or anything like that.
Yeah, super jump.
So how'd she get around?
The invisible double jump. And double jumping.
Double jump. Yeah, she hit A twice.
Yeah, so the invisible jet was something that was made specifically for Linda Carter's run. Okay. And actually Linda Carter made up the spin too. She was completely behind that idea. So the spin transformation, that was all awesome Linda Carter's thoughts. But, yeah. So
works for me.
So going into a little bit of why she is important, we're going to jump right in here, and it's because she is a major feminist icon. And I say that because she was a feminist icon even when she was first created by Marston, which is really interesting because most comics at this time and most female characters at this time don't actually develop that, I guess, that feminist iconography until later iterations because the 40s was a really sexist time. It was, it sucked. But Marston was a world-renowned psychologist who was also married to his wife, Elizabeth, who had two advanced degrees, one in law and one in psychology. And he decided that he wanted to make a superhero that could make girls be proud to be girls. And he's known famously for this quote that he wrote after Wonder Woman had already been a series. And he wrote it in an academic journal. And it says, "Not even girls want to be girls. As long as our feminine archetype lacks force, strength, and power, not wanting to be girls, they don't want to be tender, submissive, peace-loving as good women are. Women's strong qualities have become despised because of their weakness. The obvious remedy is to create a feminine character with all the strength of Superman plus all the allure of a good and beautiful woman." So that's like feminism of the 40s.
What did he ever think, I guess, since he wrote that, that she would eventually become a demigod?
I don't know, actually.
Probably not.
Because he's not a demigod now, but he wasn't, like, invulnerable at that time either.
See, I'm not familiar with Superman that much.
He was pretty much the same thing. He just, like, Superman pretty much jumped and was super strong.
They didn't want to believe anybody could fly in the 40s.
Pretty much. No flight. Not for you.
Okay.
You're grounded. But no, I actually think he'd be really happy that she's a demigod. But at the same time, I don't think he'd be happy with the type of personality that she has now. So above all else, he wanted to make sure that Wonder Woman was still balanced and that she could be submissive and she could be kind and she would pretty much conquer with love versus her fists. So she does fight a lot in the series and she's a great fighter, but it's not really stressed. And probably one of the big reasons a lot of people don't like the Golden Age Wonder Woman is because she's hogtied in almost every episode. Because those bracers I mentioned, as much as they're a sign to never be dominated by a man again, the way to remove Wonder Woman's powers is to bind her bracers together. So that happens a lot. And it's a little weird.
So is this the Wonder Woman? Because I guess I was reading that basically her bracers were used to contain, I guess that'd be almost her demigod powers. That'd be obviously later.
Yeah, that's later. Yeah.
But I mean, would that be, I guess, part of a thing with these bracers?
No, so the bracers...
Weren't they, like, originally to remind them of, you know, their past? Like, so, like, when did it turn to that gave them their powers? Or, like, that would take away her powers when I thought, like, the symbolism was, like, hey, you're never going to be chained up again because we're Amazonian badasses.
Well, that happens in the Golden Age. Both those things happen concurrently. And the reason you can take away her powers with it is... because when you bind them, you're bringing her back into bondage, and she is now helpless.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Okay. It's how you balance out a woman character. It still happens.
I mean, at least she wasn't, you know, her weakness wasn't a rock. So I think I'll take that over weakness of being a rock.
This is true.
This
is very true. All that being said... there are some problems with Wonder Woman, but she is inspired by the strong women that surrounded Marston. And Marston himself was a real big proponent of the suffrage movement. And he was related to the two women who really fought for birth control in the 40s and 50s. So he was a feminist. And I think one of the things that we can remember is that feminism changes depending on the time period that it's in. So the strides that women can make now... you had to make them smaller in the 40s. That doesn't mean that some women weren't actively resisting, but in the 40s, it was a lot of passivity. And that was idealized, but you were still able to disrupt the system, but very small-wise. It's kind of complicated. Like, we kind of have to remember in the 40s, Wonder Woman was a feminist, even though now we'd be like, why are you so obsessed with Steve Trevor?
All I ever get told about the 40s, it was the greatest time ever to live. We need to go back to the 40s.
No.
Who tells you that? And why are you interacting with those people?
Because
they post on your Facebook.
Anyway, keep going.
So, the other bad side to Wonder Woman is she is known for her fighting skills, and she does, every hero she meets is really impressed with her, and she becomes an honorary member of the Justice Society of America because she's pretty much a Nazi fighting badass. But they make her a secretary. And that's all she is. And there were these little inserts in the comics that you could mail into DC so you could be an honorary member. And what they did was they really harped on the secretary angle. So you'd have, like, her face and, like, a notary stamp. And, yeah. So Wonder Woman wasn't fighting crime. She was processing all your Justice Society of America entrance letters.
So the Justice Society of America, to be correct, is not the same as the Justice League.
Correct? No, it's not. It's all the B heroes. Well, I guess technically Jay Garrick. They're people we don't know anymore, with the exception of the Flash and the Green Lantern, who we know now as different people.
I don't count that Green Lantern.
No one counts that Green Lantern.
It's something Gardner. I think it's like Greg Gardner or something is that guy's name. And then Jay Garrick is the Flash at the time. And then you have the Atom, and those are the only three names you'll know. I think like Sand something and Hourman.
What about, it was like Starman, and then you have like Midnight. And there's people you don't care about.
I think Spectre's in there. Yeah, it's a whole bunch of people who...
Long story short, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah. Completely ridiculous. All these people would get their butts handed to them by Wonder Woman, pretty much. But she's their secretary. So, I digress. There were some problems there. But Wonder Woman still continues to be a really strong feminist icon, and the reason I led with this is because this is the thread that's going to be going through all of the stuff we talk about today, just because it was how she originated, and she's been the character that everybody latched onto. So in the 70s, Gloria Steinem actually writes a letter in Miss Magazine. And Miss Magazine, if you don't know, was one of the first largely read publications for feminism in the 70s. And she had a person on the cover in a Wonder Woman costume, and she wrote pretty much a love letter to Wonder Woman, but also said, hey, stop making the focus of the story Steve Trevor. Wonder Woman means a lot to us. You need to make sure she keeps meaning a lot to us. And surprisingly, a year later, DC responded and pretty much gave Steinem and the women who were reading Wonder Woman what they wanted. They gave them the strong character back. And this is also one of the most important parts, because she remains a symbol even today, because last year in 2016, the UN actually named her an honorary ambassador for the empowerment of women and girls. And it was attended by Linda Carter, Gal Gadot, and the Undersecretary General for Communications and Public Information, Christina Gallick.
So she's an honorary secretary.
Yes. Oh God. So she was seen to be an inspiration to all women and girls, because not only was she strong physically and a superhero, but she was also really smart. But on top of that, there was controversy, because the UN isn't just made up of countries where skin can be shown. And not only that, some modern-day feminists weren't okay with the images that they chose, because Wonder Woman, like any female character, is drawn to the male gaze. If you're actually looking at the screen right now, you can see the comic book. Wonder Woman has significantly larger breasts than the other ones. And that is done because they're writing for a young male audience. And so a lot of people weren't okay with her, with having somebody who is overly sexualized in a lot of her media be the spokesperson to say, hey, girls, be empowered. That's neither here nor there, because...
So this, I guess, controversy and everything, was this spurred upon by, I guess, men or women for the most part?
So in the countries that really push modesty, it was mostly men, but there was a large faction of women who weren't okay with the over-sexualized versions of Wonder Woman being paraded around.
Are there any women in the United Nations?
Yes.
Okay. Every picture I've ever seen, it's like finding Waldo.
Well, the majority of them are men, like any of our freaking systems of government.
I just wanted to ask, because I know every picture I've ever seen, it's like playing Find Waldo.
Yeah. No, I know. Actually, as much as I don't like Nikki Haley, she is our UN ambassador. Okay. So we actually have a woman in the UN. But there are women in the UN. There are other countries that have female leaders as well.
Okay. I just want to see where the backlash was coming from, whether it was both sides or just one dominantly.
So for the women, it was, we don't need to tell our girls to be overly sexualized, or you have to do this to get attention and empowerment, which is valid. But at the same time, like, however much skin you're showing does not dictate how empowered or disempowered you are. I've talked about that in the Lara Croft episode 1. Go listen to it. And then the other side was a lot of male-dominated countries and countries that really had strict modesty codes. And it's just the wording that was used was that it was culturally insensitive to countries and people who view the female body as something that should be covered, or at the very least, not exposed in, you know, Star Spangled Banner underwear and bare arms and large breasts. So that was that. So she's no longer the honorary ambassador, but she still is in everybody's hearts. And the moral here is that a lot of people actually did see her as a strong empowerment figure for young women. And I think she still is. And I think Gal Gadot's movie is doing that a lot. And we're going to talk about the Gal Gadot movie later. But since we're in this section, I kind of bring it up. I was actually really against Gal Gadot getting casted as Wonder Woman.
That's an understatement.
I was very mad. Very, very
completely
mad.
Against. Like, we had many conversations about it.
I raged many times because I thought they missed a chance at body diversity, and I wanted them to actually be able to choose a female who visibly looked strong in a way that wasn't hyper feminine. That being said, I saw this image, and it's on our Instagram. You can go check it out at butwhythoughpc. And it's of this little girl in a Wonder Woman costume looking up at the Justice League banner with Wonder Woman right there. And I was kind of like, you know what? I got to stop hating on Gal Gadot. And this was before I saw the movie. Like, I have to stop hating on Gal Gadot because we really need her. And I think we need to be inspired. And I think little girls deserve to be inspired. So even though I don't like the, or didn't like the casting, I'm still kind of iffy because I saw how badass a lot of the other Amazons were. I think that the main point is that she's a feminist icon. And I think she's a feminist icon for every generation. Cause she's been around for so long. So yeah, that happened.
We know you have plenty to say about that, but let's save it for a recap.
Okay. Yeah. My bad. but anyway, in the 70s, actually, is when we get her famous Wonder Woman logo. So that is with the two W's on top of each other. Before that, you got the eagle. And that was pretty much what was around forever. And then they change it. I don't really, in all honesty, I don't know too much about the comics, so I don't want to go into territory that I can't give you absolute fact on. But I'm pretty sure Matt's, on the other side of the Wormhole series will go into more of it. So in the New 52, she changes completely from anybody who would be considered a secretary, and she ends up being given a sword and shield, a complete demigod, and she was born of a natural birth between Hippolyta and Zeus. And actually, I jumped ahead of myself. At the start of the modern age, George Perez actually made her an emissary and ambassador of Themyscira to the U.S. So you see Wonder Woman's importance in public roles really, I guess, get bigger over the course of her tenure, and she becomes not only the princess of Themyscira, but somebody who is an ambassador in kind of a United Nations capacity.
It seems DC has a lot of ambassadors, it seems like. I know Marvel has probably a little bit, but it seems like DC seems like every superhero ends up being an ambassador for some place between Aquaman, Wonder Woman, I think, one of the, I can't even think who they called, in the sky.
In the sky.
Yeah.
Sky Man.
Yeah. don't know if Hot Girl, I guess, but they, depending on her origins, where they came from a different planet.
Well, she always comes from a different planet, but they try to take over the world.
Yeah, but I think at first she was
Thanagarians,
like
that's what they're called.
Well, I thought she was an ambassador at first before she became.
She was a double agent, so she was an ambassador, and then they try to kill everybody.
Well, I knew that, but I meant like at first.
Yeah. No, they definitely have more ambassadors than Marvel, I would say. But I also think they have a lot of superhero teams that are built on being ambassadors, and they deal more with like this public relations issues. Like the Justice League of America is usually overwatched by the U.S. president, and they're all on watch lists because you have to watch out for superheroes. And like, there's a lot of interplay between the government and the
just more aliens, just more like otherworldly people in DC. So like,
yeah, that is true.
How are you going to be an ambassador if you're like Iron Man? Like, you're already American.
Yeah, Lex Luthor, and you have Lex Luthor running for president. So
yeah.
Sorry
to go off on ambassadors. Keep going.
So, coming off of focusing on the feminism and going into more of it, we're actually going to talk about Linda Carter's Wonder Woman, which debuted in 1975. So she was a Latina Wonder Woman, and she predates the Bionic Woman, and she's pretty much seen as getting everything started for the female-led TV show. So Linda Carter's credited with that. And we actually, like we said, we really love the animated Wonder Woman. So we decided the best people to talk about Linda Carter was actually our moms. So first, I'm going to read a couple of the comments from Facebook because we couldn't get audio clips for all of them. Caroline Hobbs, who is our editor, Asa's mom. We call her Mum. She's our podcast mum and our Arc Life mum. She says that, quote, "I love the series because there were very few shows that had women as a lead and in an empowering position like Wonder Woman or Charlie's Angels. Linda Carter's Wonder Woman was not only stunningly beautiful, but she was also strong and smart, and she was the one the men were looking to for help. She wasn't a shrinking violet. She was tough and feminine and an all-around badass." And then, so before we do our episodes, we actually like to reach out to the fans. And I guess these are our fan, but why those? And one of my really good friends from high school, Jermel Floyd, shout out to you because you went to prom with me when I got dumped. But anyway, that's a whole nother story. His mom actually cosplayed Wonder Woman. He made her a Wonder Woman cosplay, and she cosplayed her. And she says Wonder Woman means that women are strong, and not necessarily just in a physical sense. Strong-minded, strong-willed, strong hearts. We are beautiful, brave, and smart. And that was Judy. And thank you so much for sending that in. And now you're going to get to hear, I believe, first is Adrian's mom. Do you want to introduce her?
Yeah, so my mom, man, all right. Not going to get emotional. My mom's awesome. Like, she really is my modern-day Wonder Woman. She went from being a teenage mother, had me at 16, like I could have potentially ruined her life by, you know, being around. But now she's a, you know, regional manager. The only way she'd go higher if she moved to Chicago to go be in their corporate office. So she's like at the highest position she can be. She just graduated her third kid from high school, all of us being college bound. So she went from a teenage mom to being super successful in the Navy, can work on my air conditioner better than I can. You know, she's an author now. You know, she's so supportive of me and the podcast itself. Like, she shouted us out in her new book, Dying to Be Reborn. And she gave us like a little snippet, like specifically for But Why Though the podcast. Like, we have our own page in there just because she supports the podcast as much. She's awesome. I can talk forever about her. I love her so much. I'm a mama's boy for sure. And in her clip, she talks about it. Like, she, you know, she's Linda Carter. Like, she's awesome.
So we're going to listen. Do you want to give your mom's name?
Yeah, Tiffany Reese. She shares stuff. She's awesome.
Okay, so we're going to let Tiffany tell us a little bit what Linda Carter meant for her.
So what can I say about Wonder Woman? By the time I started watching her, it was being rerun in syndication. And the one thing that stuck out for me when watching Wonder Woman was how Diana never took credit for the things that she did. She was very humble that way. In almost every episode, there was some point where Diana would spin and morph into Wonder Woman, save the day, and turn back into Diana before anyone suspected anything. And I did not realize it at the time, but as women, we do that all the time. We work silently behind the scenes, making sure everything is in order, and then we go back to our everyday routine because that is what we do. We don't need the accolades. Looking back, strong female characters, especially Wonder Woman, were definitely role models to girls of that generation. She was strong, intelligent, independent, cunning, a professional, and a badass. In the TV show, there was no real indication she wasn't supposed to be on the same level as the men in the show. Her opinion was always sought out and respected, and when she needed advice, she most often sought out input from her mother. And maybe that was by design because they were Amazon women, but I think it sent a very strong message to young girls, especially me. And you know, I didn't know, and I still don't believe, that women are supposed to be the weaker sex. I believe we as women are strong and empowered, but we're only as strong and empowered as we believe we are. Wonder Woman knew she was strong and empowered. The older women model behavior for younger girls, and Wonder Woman did that for me, as did my grandmother, who was a captain in the army. Diana / Wonder Woman just was a strong, confident, independent woman. And that is what I saw and watched. So I didn't know I wasn't supposed to be anything other than that when I grew up. And now that I'm grown up, I am also a strong, confident, and independent woman.
Thanks, Bob. Love you.
Yeah, thank you so much, Tiffany, for giving us your input. We'll talk about this after we're done with the mom shares, because I kind of want to let them speak for themselves and we can react. But I guess, so my mom, Sylvia Moore, she was actually a single mother for the first four years of my life. She's really strong. She's really awesome. And I'm just going to let her talk about it because my mom, I love you. So, yeah. So, okay.
Well, growing up as a Latina in the 60s and 70s, the TV shows were very limited in what roles the women played. Most of them were, I felt, subservient, submissive to men. They were secondary class citizens. They were, you know, they had roles as domestics, mothers, wives. But Wonder Woman was different. You know, Linda Carter, here she was, a Latina, you know, female, in a lead role. She was strong, you know, independent, and, you know, was cleaning up crime. And growing up, I didn't see much of that. The only strong role I had was my mother, and the closest I got to somebody like my mother was Wonder Woman. And so that opened up doors for me. When I went off to college, I majored in law enforcement. I wanted to be like Wonder Woman. I wanted to clean up crime. I wanted, you know, to save the world. And that, in turn, when I did eventually become a mother and, you know, was raising my daughter, that also helped me shape her life. You know, I wanted her to be independent. I wanted her to be strong. You know, I wanted her to be like Wonder Woman. I wanted her to be her own woman, her own person. So I was real selective on the things I exposed her to. I tried not to overexpose her to stereotype roles or, you know, books, toys, you know, clothing. I wanted her to be a freethinker. So I owe a lot of that to Linda Carter and Wonder Woman.
Yeah, so I think our moms kind of say it really, really well. That for me kind of shows the importance of representation, and that's one thing that Wonder Woman has been since the 40s. What do you get? I guess, Matt, do you want to jump in?
My mom's kind of in Afghanistan in a shelter getting bombed, so we were unable to get a clip. So that's why I don't have one. I just want to throw it in there, I guess.
I also just want to point out that all of our moms are really supportive of what we do, and we want to thank you guys for, being our Wonder Woman. And I think listening to what the comments we got, what my mom and Adrian's mom said, this is what you needed in the 70s. And I actually talked to my mom for like an hour and a half about Wonder Woman. And one of the things that she pointed out was that at this time, so in 1975, you have the Women's Lib movement, and you have people pushing to get the ERA, which is the Equal Rights Amendment, passed. And that doesn't pass. Like, an amendment that said that women had equal rights did not pass. Like, kind of let that sink in. And it still has not. And so for the girls of that generation, that meant a lot. Seeing her like that, seeing her being assertive and strong at a time when doing that, because of vocal women like Gloria Steinem not taking anything from people who saw her as less than, a lot of the times women were vilified for being those things. And having Linda Carter on screen and having her be, and this is, as much as it's a critique to have Wonder Woman be hyper feminine, it is something that says you can be really feminine and you can also be really strong. And you don't have to choose one or the other. Just because you're assertive doesn't mean you're cold. You can be tender too. You can be aggressive, but you can still be loving. And I think that was really big for them to hear. Listening to them explain all this. And then one of the things that Linda Carter actually told Patty Jenkins, who is the director of the Wonder Woman movie, was that I never stopped playing Diana, even when I started playing Wonder Woman. And that's important because the character wasn't separate from who she was in and out of costume. Diana was always strong and Wonder Woman was always kind. And I think that's kind of big, you know, for a little girl to see.
Yeah, I think the best part, just listening to my mom talk about it, because my mom wasn't born until 76. So, like, when she's watching this, like, it's been over for, you know, I guess maybe almost 10 years. I don't know.
Yeah,
she watched it. Yeah, and she still got something out of it, even though it had been out of, you know, like you said, she watched the reruns of it. So even transcended, you know, generation and time, like, it still affected people, you know, 10 years down the road.
Yeah, and like one of the things too I remember, because like I'm really into comics, if you're watching this there are comics behind me right now, every time I talked about a superhero, my mom always brought up Wonder Woman. Like, why aren't you reading Wonder Woman? You should watch Wonder Woman. Oh, I love Wonder Woman. And so she tried really, really hard to get me to read the Wonder Woman comics, I just wasn't interested in DC. And at this point, like, the majority of my knowledge I've gotten, probably doing the research for her for this episode of the podcast, but also just the few that I have read, like, I want to read more. And I'm kind of kicking myself for not reading more. There's probably more we could say about Linda Carter. Like, I think there are two fun facts. The first was that Linda Carter did a helicopter stunt all by herself. They wanted her to use a stunt double, and she was like, nah, I'm Wonder Woman, I got this. And the studio was like really mad at her, but she was doing her own stunts when other people weren't. And then obviously she came up with the spin herself, and she actually influenced a lot of the direction that Wonder Woman went. So she had a lot of input on the character that she was playing, and she was really cognizant that young girls were going to watch her. And she wanted to make sure that if something, you know, something sexist got written in the show, she was going to not let that stand, you know?
Yeah, wasn't she like Miss America, like a couple years before she filmed?
I think so.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure she competed like Miss World, like Miss Universe. Was like the world pet. Yeah, whatever it was at the time. So like, she was definitely the full package of like beauty, and then I'm going to go do a helicopter stunt.
Yeah.
Which is kind of like what we see, I guess, with the general theme between all the quotes you read and the clips we listened to. The
yeah.
general theme of just strong.
And get a woman who can do both.
Yes.
Yeah, but beauty isn't a requirement. Young girls listening to this podcast right now. I don't know if you are, but...
I think now that I'm thinking about it, like, all of the women in my family are strong, you know, strong women. And my mom being, you know, other than Stefania, like, the most important woman in my life. And I think just knowing how strong my mom is based off, like, her watching Wonder Woman and Xena, that made me want a strong and feisty Latina. And I think that's how I was. So thanks, Linda Carter, for inspiring my mom to be strong and independent.
Yeah.
So.
And actually, my mom kind of ended that saying that she didn't want me to have any stereotypes. So my mom tells a story, and if you get her started on it, she'll like drag it out for like 45 minutes. Matt's heard it like 10 times. but my first Christmas, my grandma wanted to get me a kitchen set. It's my first or second Christmas, and my grandma wanted to get me a kitchen set, and my mom was like, I'm not going to do that, because then she's going to be thinking that all she can do is stay in the home, and, you know, there's nothing wrong with homemakers, like, homemakers, unsung heroes, but my grandma had 7 kids, she was pregnant more times than that, but she had 7 kids that survived, and she was just at home. And my mom also said that what she saw in my grandma was really subservient to my grandpa. That was just culture of the time. That's how it was, especially in Mexican culture. There's a lot of that. But what my mom said was when she saw Linda Carter do her spin and transform, she said that she saw her mom do that. And, you know, only she didn't spin around, you know. But she was assertive enough to be the hero when she needed to, and to stand, you know, my grandma, as much as she was subservient, and I use that word, I guess, kind of loosely for my grandpa, he respected her, you know. He wasn't like the machismo guy who, you know, did whatever he wanted and disrespected her. No, she was a quiet strong, and my mom got to see that, and my grandma is probably the strongest, you know, she's passed now, but anyway, so all that being said, and now I'm turning to my mom and making this a 45-minute story, my mom also bought me a football, because she wanted me to have both gendered option of toys, because she refused to let me be what somebody else thought I was going to be and do that.
I feel like our episode on Wonder Woman turned into Wonder Moms.
Yeah, moms are great. They deserve the praise.
But no, it was just because I have no reference for Linda Carter. I haven't seen a single episode, and I really wanted our moms to kind of like talk about it. So
yeah, I think it works out great. I think
we weren't born then.
Yeah, we weren't born then.
My mom was even born then, so I think that just shows like how important it is.
My mom was.
So it gives you two perspectives on, like, it wasn't just like a flash in the pan kind of thing. Like, she was legit important for multiple generations.
Yeah, and she inspires all the other female-led shows. Like, without Linda Carter, you don't end up with a Xena, you don't end up with a Buffy.
Yeah, exactly.
That doesn't happen, you know, and it's kind of how Gal Gadot, with this movie, it's successful, and now I'm hoping we're gonna get more female-led superhero movies, because people need proof that you can make money off of it, unfortunately. So, moving into another But Why, though. Bi visibility. And the reason this is important is that bisexual characters in media, so comic books, TV, movies, they tend to be highly sexualized and used as kind of like set pieces. They don't really mean much. And it's been confirmed, so this is canon, that Wonder Woman is bisexual. And, I mean, this is kind of a culmination of a whole bunch of, like, same-sex allusions that happened from the 40s to today, and it's kind of a realization of that, that Wonder Woman kisses Harley Quinn in the New 52. It's a one-off, kind of like a special issue where they're in London and, like, fighting bad guys together. And then in 2015, she officiates a same-sex wedding. And in the 40s, she was actually seen or characterized by a lot of people as being the lesbian character counterpart to Batman, because a lot of the people thought that Batman was gay. So they saw each other as that, which that has a lot of negative connotations as well, but we're talking about the positives. And so DC actually downplays a lot of her sexuality. Like, they leave it there and it kind of hangs in the air and they mess with it when they want to make a joke, until Greg Rucka confirms it. And then DC kind of jumps on board, and they actually have her saying that she loves people for who they are, not their gender, and that she actually has the being born in Themyscira. She has the privilege of not being constrained by gender roles. She has a privilege of not being constrained by gender roles or by heteronormativity. And for her, it's not weird to love a man, and it's not weird to love a woman. It is weird to think that it's weird to love somebody. And so in 2016, after Greg Rucka confirms that she's bisexual, there was a ton of backlash, as happens when any character comes out. But he stuck with it. He didn't waver. And then Gal Gadot at this point is promoting the Wonder Woman movie, and they asked her what she thought, and she was really happy with it. She said that this is really great.
Please, please, please. Get some Harley Quinn action.
No.
It's canon. New 52. It could happen. Damn.
It's not canon.
You can bring it back.
No. That would be her being a set piece to please male audiences, not it actually being a component of her identity.
Hey, she could love Harley Quinn. You don't know that. What if they do a really compelling storyline?
No.
I just want to know, in this whole thing, when did Harley Quinn decide she was going to be nice and work with Wonder Woman? Or why?
I have not read the comic, and I didn't read too much into it, to tell you.
Because that really just seems... the combination, I guess, when I saw that was
probably done really well. And it's probably a very compelling storyline that they could bring to life.
Well, no. And it's written by Grant Morrison, who's actually a really good comic book writer. But and yeah, anyway. So when you hear Wonder Woman's sexuality being talked about, a lot of the time she's expressed as being queer instead of bisexual. And the reason queer is the word that's chosen is it's a word that was originally derogatory and it's been taken back, and it's used to make a political statement, but also focus on a type of expression of the self that isn't structured into male or female or heterosexual or homosexual. It's more like just a state of being. And if I got that wrong, Twitter, please correct me. I think I got it right. And it's meant to encompass both gender expression, identity, and sexual orientation. And so that's how she's usually described among the fandom, is as queer. But it's also important because there are very, 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 very few bi characters in any canon of any fandom ever. So that's why she's important. That's one of the but why those. And one of the last but why those, I'm actually really surprised at because I didn't know, but she's heralded as being a pacifist icon, originally. And so she's been credited for being the deflector and not the violent hero. And it was like the Marston's original stuff was more focused on her being a scientist and a nurse and healing people. And some say that she's smarter, so she's not going to use violence. And because she was made to encourage little girls to have strong, moral, peaceful problem solvers, It was the opposite of the violence that was shown in, you know, Batman or Superman or the comics that young boys are reading. And in my opinion, that's sexist as hell, because I don't think that we should be relegated to being peaceful and loving and caring. If we want to throw it down, we can throw it down. And that's what animated series Wonder Woman gives me.
The only thing I can say about that, though, is being on... I must misspell this.
Themyscira.
There we go. Can't pronounce words. At least from everything I knew about that, they always wanted to remain isolated. And they never wanted to actually get involved.
Yes.
And now that's not necessarily being a pacifist, but it was like, even though they trained, it's like, we didn't want to go to fight. We don't want to help you. We don't want to go to man's world. We want to stay here and be left alone.
Yeah, no, and that's very true. But the thing is Wonder Woman, in every storyline, she's the one that isn't okay with doing that. Like, she wants to get involved.
Right. But I just see from, like, if you're talking about, like, I guess not necessarily, I know it's not quite pacifist, but I guess just, like,
the whole... It's like an isolationist thing. Like, you don't want to get involved in other people's problems.
Yeah, and so, like, I guess even the island, her parents, or I guess her mother at the time, and then I guess everybody else on the island, they just don't want to be involved.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that may not be direct pacifism, but even isolation of just, we're going to do nothing or help.
Yeah, well, I think but that's, like, so that's not the argument that people are making. The argument that people are making is that Wonder Woman, as a character, chooses to disarm the bad guy as opposed to kill the bad guy. And the reason people are mad with current iterations of Wonder Woman is because she kills the bad guys and she doesn't care. She has a moral compass and she's going to abide by good. Actually, in the animated series, you get that line where she's like, my enemies stay dead. Or, like, not stay dead, but my enemies don't come back. And she's throwing shade at Superman because Superman doesn't kill and Superman is constantly being hounded by these same enemies that he was fighting.
I guess it's funny when you bring that up because Superman doesn't kill. Batman's whole thing is pretty much I don't kill. But yet you just portrayed that.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. Like, a lot of these characters don't kill anybody. I mean, if you don't want to kill anybody, I don't think that's, like, a bad idea. It's not like she's like, oh, no, we're not going to fight. I mean, just because you don't kill somebody doesn't make you, like, an extreme pacifist. If she was an extreme pacifist, she would have stayed on Themyscira.
Yeah.
But like Matt said.
Well, so, but the thing is, and that's why I don't think this argument holds up. The argument is that she is a pacifist, and because she chooses to not maim her people and just knock them unconscious, and she deflects things, that makes her different from the other heroes, and that makes her a pacifist icon. And the reason I say that that's sexist is because, like you said, Superman doesn't kill, he's not being called a pacifist. Batman doesn't kill in most storylines. He's not being called a pacifist, but...
He doesn't get called a pacifist, but he does get run into some problems.
No, he runs into some problems, but what I'm saying is she's a female character, and in all the characterization, she says they say because she's feminine, she's smarter and doesn't use violence, and she's going to think her problems out. And so she's the pacifist character that we all want our women to be, whereas I don't want that. I want Xena in my Wonder Woman.
In this argument... I know this might be a little off. Is she an ambassador?
What are you talking about?
Well, Adrian's kind of laughing, looking at me. I'm just kind of wondering, because I guess at least when I think of an ambassador, they're going to try to have more of a pacifist type of way of doing things.
So in George Bettis's run, she's an ambassador. So she's not always an ambassador. And that this is, I think the biggest thing was Grant Morris using this to talk about the Wonder Woman movie. And I know a lot of the time they talk about a New 52 Wonder Woman, because New 52 Wonder Woman has a sword and the shield, whereas the bracers deflect and the lasso incapacitates versus a sword that is very much made to maim and kill things.
Okay.
So Morrison actually said that Marston's vision was healing in science, and Grant Morrison pretty much thought that Marston would be really, really against the way Wonder Woman is portrayed now. And I think, personally, being feminist has changed, and we're not limited to only being passive and using passive resistance. I think that at the time that Marston was talking, having Diana be educated was important, because that was a time when women were only going to school to get married. They weren't actually using the education that they were given. But now I think the fact that women can be like Xena or Buffy and fight back, and we don't have to be okay with situations that we're uncomfortable with. And that's actually pretty large. Like, it's this idea of not having to remain passive or silent about things, but be really overt about it. Like, if somebody catcalls you in a street, it's no longer just deal with it, it's say something back. And that's a complete shift in, that's a complete shift away from the way Wonder Woman was fighting before.
Okay.
She doesn't kill people anymore. I mean, that's fine.
No, she none of those dudes kill people. No, she kills
people. Oh, she kills people again?
That's yeah, the New 52,
she will kill a lot of people.
No, she kills people now.
In New 52, she kills a lot of people.
So how is she a passive icon now if she doesn't kill people anymore?
She's been a passive icon, and people are mad that she's not a pacifist icon anymore.
I get confused by a lot of these because it seems like no matter what you do, everybody just gets mad. And I guess that's why some of these I get like...
Yeah.
I guess backwards.
Well, but a lot of the time too, the majority of the people that are mad that she's not a pacifist icon anymore are people like Grant Morrison and tend to be men. At least from the stuff that I read. Granted, a lot of the Gal Gadot Wonder Woman things, and it's actually one of the reasons I don't like reading Feminist Frequency as much as I love Feminist Frequency, is they were really mad that Wonder Woman just completely wrecked everybody.
She's a demigod.
Exactly. So yeah, I mean, now she's not a pacifist, and that's why people aren't okay, because she's been heralded as a pacifist icon up until this point. Or I guess the New 52 run, which is 2011 on. So. Does that, any of that make sense?
I don't know. Anything I've ever watched Wonder Woman in, I've never thought, oh yeah, she's a pacifist icon. Well, so it sounds like Grant Morrison is just upset for no reason.
Exactly.
Because his Wonder Woman didn't take or something.
Well, that's what I'm saying, though. Like, Justice League Wonder Woman in the Bruce Timm series that we all said was our reason for pretty much loving her. She gets down.
Flashpoint Wonder Woman. Oh. Literally kills.
Yeah.
Like, a whole bunch of dudes. With her lasso. It's messed up.
It's messed up.
I think a lot of people kill a lot of people in Flashpoint, though.
This is also true.
Because you have Thomas Wayne.
I don't know. I guess it doesn't bother me. Like, either way, it doesn't bother me. As long as she's still, you know, messing people up. If she doesn't kill them, oh, I mean, okay, that's fine. Like, it's not going to bother me. Yeah. But as long as she's messing people up, I don't care what she does at the end. As long as she's still fighting and being badass, that's all I care about.
Well, like, my whole, like, I'm not, like, I don't care if she kills people either. What I care about is people saying that she shouldn't use violence. And I'm like, no, she's capable of it. And if somebody's hitting her, she's not going to be like, no, stop.
She's stop actually when you gonna say that, make, right?
No, she's actually going to make them stop. And I don't believe in being a pacifist in anything. So, but yeah. And I think this, I mean, it kind of brings us into the Justice League animated series and the animated universe, because that's actually been defined as the Wonder Woman of the current generation for the most part. And when they say current generation, they pretty much mean like 85 to probably when you were making memories of the Justice League animated series. And it's pretty much quintessential Wonder Woman. It's all on Netflix, so you can watch that. And I think this brings us into Wonder Woman in the DCEU. And we're not going to spoil the movie or talk about the movie too much. We're just going to talk a little bit about the stuff that's been going on around the movie. That's because if you stay with us, we will be recording our Wonder Woman review in a short amount of time when we're done with this. So one of the most important things about the Wonder Woman movie itself, it is that it is the first successful female superhero movie. And not only that, it is the first superhero movie with a female director. And it made the most money out of any female directed movie ever.
Quick question, though. I keep seeing first female director. What did Zack Snyder do?
Zack Snyder's not a female.
I know he's not. I'm asking what he did for this movie then.
Oh, he wrote it.
Okay. That's what I was asking.
No, he was a writer.
Okay, so he was a writer then.
I'm yes.
Okay, that's what I was making sure that he... I didn't think he was a director, but I was like, no. I wasn't quite sure if he was a writer. And okay.
No, he was a writer. She directed it.
Okay, that's fine. Yeah. I just wanted to make sure that was clarified, because he's the one that usually always come up for the most part, and so I was trying to make sure that was clarified.
Yeah, yeah. No. And she, the reason that you can tell, and I think a lot of female audiences really love the movie, is because you have the first female-directed superhero fighting and doing battle shots. It's not a shot panning to the butt like Scarlett Johansson and moving up her as she slowly walks. It's all about her not
Candy. Hey. Skojo did a lot for female superheroes.
She did.
She did, but it was a lot of butt shots, and that's problematic.
Hey. She did her part.
Once again, butt shots. Anyway.
He's not Catwoman. Could have been Catwoman.
Canon, so we're just not going to talk about that. Or Elektra. Or the Supergirl movie.
Oh, that movie's so bad. Jesus.
So all of those came before. And those are all directed by men, I believe, too. So this is the first time you get a female superhero actually being told from the female perspective. And we'll talk about the movie when we get there, and I have to keep stopping myself because there's so much I want to say.
I'll give down the breakdown of the numbers, break down the movie, boom, broad spent, wrap it up, let's go.
Okay, so the movie from a numbers standpoint, it made $100.5 million opening weekend here in the States, and internationally it grossed $223 million. It outperformed Thor 1 and 2, Cap 1 and 2, Doctor Strange, and Iron Man if you don't take into account inflation.
If you don't say, I'm sorry, I just don't like the argument with Iron Man because it's 10 years ago and it's a totally different working frame. It was like the first movie. Without Iron Man, we don't even get a Wonder Woman.
Oh yeah, without Iron Man, you don't get any cinematic
That's the only thing I've seen that argument brought up a lot. Like, oh, it did so much better than Iron Man. I'm like, really?
Really? Inflation's a thing.
Yeah.
Between inflation and the fact Iron Man 3 made like almost $50 million more than Iron Man 1.
Yeah. Okay, so we'll
and Batman v Superman did way better than any of these, and it was terrible, so...
Yes, that's what I'm saying. It's okay. That's why the...
Well, yeah, why I'm going to bring it into the Rotten Tomatoes area. Because Wonder Woman outperforms pretty much every single DCEU movie on both the critic scale and the fan scale, with the exception of The Dark Knight. The Dark Knight comes in 1 point above at 94%, Wonder Woman standing strong at 93%, and Iron Man is also the only other movie to beat her. She also beats out all the other Marvel movies as well. And on top of that, I think the only thing to just kind of crush it is Luke Cage, which is the Netflix TV show, and that's sitting at 98% on Rotten Tomatoes right now.
I didn't know they did Netflix series.
Yeah, they do shows now.
Is that even equivalent?
No, it isn't. That's why I led with the other two.
Oh, okay.
But I'm just saying that the only thing out there superhero-wise
that's fine. I just didn't know if you could account a series
because even with Dark Knight and Iron Man, it's still only 1 point that sets them apart. Okay. So it's not even like... It's not... okay, I'm not going to make an NBA joke because I... Yeah.
Just come on. Sad.
Anyway. Okay. Also, something really big that it did was the Amazons in the movie are played by athletes. So they're played by professional athletes. They're played by workout enthusiasts. They kind of try to get pretty much any... They try to diversify the Amazons and show them all in the majority of different body types, not all. And show that the women they actually have doing a lot of their fight scenes are trained women who will crush pretty much all three people on this podcast right now.
I don't know about all that. Chill out.
Artemis will mess you up.
I'm a freak athlete, bro. Nah, they're pretty jacked in the movie.
Yeah, so they actually have...
I could argue with you except with Artemis. I'm not going to beat them.
Yeah, so they have the pretty much the most famous... female boxer is in the movie as one of the Amazons as well. So the other part to this is the weight of expectation. So there are pretty much three camps, and Wonder Woman, the main argument that has been met from the female side watching it is male directors get to make really crappy superhero movies all the time. This is an undue burden on a female director having to do a really great job to even get other female movies made. And that is true, but there's a lot packaged into that. Because you also have the weight of the feminist expectation. Is Wonder Woman, because I had this issue with the first trailer, is it going to be a complete story with her own agency? Is there going to be too much romance? How are they going to play Steve Trevor? Is he going to overshadow her? So there was the weight of this feminist expectation for Wonder Woman that she had to live up with. And not only that, you had a lot of, I would say the majority of people said that the success of the DC movieverse rested on Wonder Woman's shoulders because of how bad, no matter how much money Batman versus Superman and Suicide Squad made, fan-wise, nobody likes them.
Is she going to win an Oscar?
Oh, God. Critically, or was it Academy Award winning Suicide Squad? All that being said, I would say all three of these expectations were pretty much met and thrown out the window because, like our mom said, she was a badass. The other thing around it was that she's not American enough. That was said by some people because they thought Wonder Woman was meant to be an American hero. And while she was World War II war propaganda, she was never an American, and the only reason her outfits reflected Americana was because she was either an ambassador, an emissary, or her mom made her costume because she knew she was going to the United States. So, yeah. That's an unbased claim, and I won't support it.
Yeah, I didn't even know that was a thing. Like, most people know nothing about Wonder Woman. Like, she's literally not even... Like, she's almost, like, not even from this world, almost. It's, like, how foreign she is.
Yeah.
And she's played by Gal Gadot, who's Israeli and French. Like, what did you expect? Like, what did you want?
And she, yeah. So, it's, yeah. They were also really mad that she had an accent. But, yeah. You're never going to please those people with anything. So, yeah. And then the last and final and probably the biggest of the controversies and important things around this movie is the Alamo Drafthouse women-only screenings for Wonder Woman. And that a lot of people or a lot of men were not happy with that. I guess I won't say a lot. Very vocal men on the internet were not happy with it. And there is a potential lawsuit against the city of Austin for allowing Alamo Drafthouse to do female-only screenings. And I just think that's complete bull, and I can get into a really long argument about it, but Alamo Drafthouse has stood by its decision, and when people kept saying that it was the wrong decision to make, not only did they respond very smartly, as did our mayor, they also added more screenings. So they added more screenings in different states, and they added another screening here in Austin.
Yeah, it's just kind of dumb. Like, they're not seeing it any earlier. Like, it means absolutely nothing. They do women's screenings, like, all the time for, like...
Girly night.
Girly night movies. Like, it's so, so dumb. I do want, and this is Alamo Drafthouse, this is my formal request for an all-male Thor Ragnarok buddy cop movie showing. So I can go take the bros and not feel guilty about not taking Stefani.
I thought you were going to talk about WrestleMania, which seemed to be awesome.
What?
They did WrestleMania where they just played nothing but Kurt Russell movies.
Oh, yeah, that's right. They did WrestleMania. I forgot about that.
If you ever want to take all the pros, take them to WrestleMania with all your long hair.
Yeah.
And that's something that, like, Alan Drafthouse pointed out. Like, we do screenings for fans all the time. And I think one of the reasons that they were really vocal about doing this is... I mean, in Stefani cosplay at Adrian's, I'm sure she's experienced maybe a little bit of this, but when women dress up as superheroes, they get a lot of harassment. And by doing a female-only screening, it allows women to be in an environment where they're not going to be catcalled when they go into the theater or when they're waiting to go into the theater. And you can take your daughter, and it can be a really great bonding moment. And people just want to make people not happy. And that's all.
Yeah, I generally feel people who are going to Alamo Drafthouse don't have a problem with this. It's people who don't know what Alamo Drafthouse is. Exactly. If you go to Alamo Drafthouse and you have a problem with this, why do you even go there in the first place? Like, you have no idea what their values are.
I know. I was like, I don't even want your daughter in a movie theater because I don't want kids in the movie theater.
Exactly. And Alamo Drafthouse only lets kids in the movie theater on Sundays.
Yeah. So it's silly.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is silly.
Oh, but Buddy Cop, all boys night, Thor Ragnarok. Please. So I cannot take Stefani and then not feel guilty about it.
But as much as we think that it is stupid, and I think the majority of people agree with us, Austin is probably getting sued.
And nothing's going to happen. It'll be tied up.
Nah, they're a private company. It's fine. They'll be fine.
No, so that's actually the problem, is the Austin equal opportunity thing extends to private companies in a very big way. Because Austin is
They have the you're right. They have the equal opportunity to go see another damn showing of the movie. Get out of here. Like, I'm sure Alamo Drafthouse is filled with showings of Wonder Woman right now. Like, yeah, you cannot go to that one. You'll be okay.
It was one, and then it turned into two out of the many shows.
Yeah, like, you'll be all right. It'll be okay. Like,
I just want to know how much of a butthead are you to put yourself in a space where, one, like, it's not made for you and it's made for other people to feel safe, and two, that you are genuinely offended at the fact that women are getting together in an open setting. Like, maybe you belong in the 40s.
I told you, everybody keeps telling me the 40s were a great time. I'm still confused.
All right, let's wrap it up so we can talk about, so we can go into our bullshit corner.
Yeah. So on that note, we would love to hear what you think about Wonder Woman. Go ahead and send us an email at info@butwhythoughpodcast.com and rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes. It's how other people find us, and we really want your reviews, guys. Please send them. And you can find us at ButWhyThoughPC on Instagram and Twitter. As always, you can find me personally on Twitter at OhMyMythBrandier. Adrian?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at SuperReese93, SuperRuiz93. And my mom deserves a shout out for her book, Dying to Be Reborn. Go check it out on Amazon. It's really great. And you can see our names in it because we're in it.
Matt?
You can find me on Twitter at DatM18, DATT18. You can also find me on our YouTube channel at ButWhyThoughPodcast. And also on the website at butwhythoughpodcast.com, as I am doing our own little, I guess, behind the scenes / extended cut of our show called The Other Side of the Wormhole, The Lost Thoughts of the But Why Though Podcast, because obviously we could talk forever about a lot of these things.
Yeah, so if you think we missed anything, if you think we made any factual errors, go ahead and let us know on our Facebooks, Twitter, and in our email, and Matt will cover it on the other side of the wormhole.
Yeah, I try to just basically correct, get anything we forgot, any other tangent thoughts that I end. Sometimes I might ramble and end up on something totally different, but I think it's all great fun.
So, Hera, give us strength, and thanks for listening.
You'll learn a lot of stuff.
Bye-bye.